originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. An intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who took Derby 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pradnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano. A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm your host, retired jockey Christina McManigal, and I'm joining you tonight from our Jimmy John's of Lexington, Kentucky studio. I'd like to thank everyone listening tonight on Sirius 219, XM 206, and to those of you tuning into our website at www.horseracingradio.net. A portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides financial assistance to riders who have suffered devastating on-track injuries. If you are able to help, I encourage you to visit their website at www.pdjf.org. Our guest tonight is the all-time leading rider in Ohio with a record 34 titles at Belterra and River Downs in Cincinnati, 13 leading rider titles at Beulah Park, and 2 leading rider titles at Turfway. He's been around the track 49,969 times over the past 45 years he's spent in the saddle. He's the 9th all-time leading jockey by number of wins, 6,879 to be exact, and that number is still growing with over $44 million in earnings. It is an honor to introduce jockey Perry Utes. Perry, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you.
So great to have you here, Perry. I have been just dying to get you here on the show for a long time. So excited to spend the next hour with you, Perry. It's just you have such a remarkable story. And when I talked to you yesterday, you said you actually have the day off today. So that's probably pretty rare for you. Do you still go out in the mornings and work horses, or did you take the morning off today?
I took the morning off. I usually don't go out on the dark days when we're not racing. I usually go out 4 or 5 times a week during the week. Still get on 3, 4, 5 a day.
Wow, and even in this cold weather we've had up until this week, you're still out there working horses?
Yeah. It's how you keep your business for the afternoon.
Exactly right. How do you deal with the cold weather, Perry?
It's tough. You just suck it up and go on.
I got to tell you, when I first started riding, in November, and my first option I thought was to ride at Turfway Park. Then I rode one race there, and it was freezing cold, and I decided I was going to Tampa. So a lot of respect for you, Perry, dealing with that type of weather, and you've been doing it for so many years. And tell us, as I mentioned in the introduction, you're the all-time leading rider in Ohio. And why did you decide to make Ohio your home?
Well, I always done really well there, so I just hated to leave. Because I would rather win races than to make a whole bunch of money. I was real comfortable here, could ride a lot of horses, win a lot of races, and that's kind of what gave me the thrill, was winning races. I mean, I thought I could ride as good, to be down at Churchill or Keeneland, but you just can't win as many down there, and I just really like to win.
I love it. Perry, let's go back to the beginning. And you were born in Lepanto, Arkansas. Correct me if I pronounce that wrong. But
Lepanto, that's close enough.
Okay, good. And tell us how you grew up and how you first became introduced to horse racing.
Well, I grew up in Rivervale. That's about 5 miles away from Lepanto. It's a real, real small town. And I had cousins that were on the racetrack, and they were on it for quite a few years. And once I graduated from high school, they called me up and said, hey, you want to come up here to Chicago, and we'll teach you how to be a jockey. And I was always real, real small when I was growing up, and always liked horses, always rode horses around the house there. And I just thought it'd be a really good job. So as soon as I graduated high school, that's where I went, Chicago. They kind of taught me how to do it.
You said you grew up riding horses, but you weren't actually riding on a racetrack. You were just riding around the farm then?
Right, right.
And you mentioned your friends. You grew up with Early and Jackie Fires, right?
Right, they're my cousins.
Your cousins?
Yes.
It's all in the family.
Yeah.
Something in the blood there.
Yeah. Yeah, they were the ones that got me started.
And were you guys competitive growing up? Did you all know at a young age that you wanted to be jockeys?
Not really. I think about the fifth grade, that's when Early first started riding. I think I kind of started thinking maybe that'd be a really cool job. And I did a book report or something, or a school report on it about being a jockey, and I kind of followed through. Because I was always real, real small when I was in school. I mean, I was like the smallest kid in class. And so it just kind of was kind of natural, I guess.
Did you play any sports growing up?
Not much. Just a little sandlot baseball, and that's about it.
I read an article, Perry, that you're at one time worried about getting drafted into the Army. But tell us that story. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I was 18 years old. I was in Chicago, and I had to go down for a physical. And I was really worried about it because I'd heard about the small guys having to go into Vietnam and go down in the tunnels to be tunnel rats. And I really, really didn't want to do that. So I went in, and they weighed me and everything. I think I weighed 95 pounds. And they said, well, we don't really need you because you're too small. We got backpacks that weigh more than you do, so we'll call you if we get really, really desperate. And they never did call me, so I skated by that one. I really didn't want to go. I give them guys a lot of credit for going over there. Like I said, I was so small, that's what I figured I'd do, was be the tunnel rat. You know, I could go down there, try to flush them guys out of them tunnels, and I just didn't want to do that.
You didn't want to be a tunnel rat, but you obviously had no problem going 40 miles on the back of a thoroughbred with an ambulance chasing you around. I mean, just saying.
Yeah.
What is it about that, Perry? You're basically out there defying death, and you're risking life and limb every time you go out there, but obviously you can't think about that, but you've had so many injuries and so many close calls. How do you not think about it?
I was really blessed with the ability to just block it out, you know, just completely block it out of your mind. Because if you really sat around and think about it, if you could get killed every single time you went to work, you just couldn't do it. The fear would just grip you so bad that you couldn't even move. You'd be paralyzed. So I've been really lucky that I can just put it right out of my mind. I mean, I've seen some horrible, horrible wrecks that happen right beside me. I could block it out and go out and ride the next race, you know. I mean, I've seen a jockey one time get killed right beside me. I mean, we're running head-to-head for the lead down at the eighth pole. Mm. His horse went down, whole field run over him, killed him. And, we rode the next day.
Wow.
So, I mean, like I said, you just kind of block it out, you know, just hope it never happens to you.
Amazing. Amazing that you're So able to do that. And given the dangerous part of the sport, what did your parents think when you first told them, hey, I'm going to Chicago, I'm going to be a jockey?
They really didn't think much about it. They really didn't know the real dangers of it and stuff. And so they really didn't say much about it.
At what point in your career did you learn that Jackie Fires was paralyzed?
Well, we were living together at the time, so I knew it about 20 minutes after it happened. Mm. Yeah, he was here in Cincinnati when that happened.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was pretty tough because me and him were always real close. And we about the same age. We grew up there at home, and you know, we went to school together, and you know, every place that we were at, every racetrack, just about, we always lived together. And so that was pretty tough. That was probably the hardest thing that's ever happened to me since I've been riding, is when that happened. But he is such a good guy, though. When you see him and talk to him and stuff, you would never know that he was paralyzed, because he don't make you, you know, feel uncomfortable about it, or, you know, don't make you feel sorry for him. He's just a really, really super guy.
Joggy Perry Utes joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Perry, you get the phone call. What did you say, 7 days after you graduated high school to go to Chicago? And you're going to learn how to be a jockey. And I'm assuming, obviously, that was the first time you had been away from home. And what was that transition like for you, moving from Arkansas to Chicago and being away from your parents and your family for the first time?
It was a little different. Like I said, I'd never been on my own or anything, you know. And I got lucky because I stayed with my cousins up there in Chicago. They had a place, you know, right there on the track. So they just kind of took me in, you know, and just really, it wasn't that bad. You know, like I said, I wasn't really on my own. I was with them guys, and I lived with them, and they kind of took care of me.
What did you think of the city?
It was big. It was about the biggest town I'd ever been in.
Probably a bit of a culture shock, I would definitely think.
Pretty much, yeah.
And then when you got to the racetrack, what did you start out? Who did you start off working for, and what were you doing?
Eddie Reynolds was the trainer's name. Because my cousin was working for him. He was galloping horses for him. So he got me a job there, and my very, very first job on the track was shed rowing horses. Horses that had been laid up for, you know, 4 or 5 months or so, and they didn't want to send them to the track right away. So I would walk them every day, about a half hour around the track, maybe 4 or 5. And I did that for about a month, and then I started going out on the pony, galloping a little bit, and then they started taking me out on thoroughbreds with a pony, and, you know, galloping a few. And then one day they just turned me loose and said, you know, this is how you do it. This is what you do.
Did you find it was easy for you at first?
It wasn't too bad. The pony was the hardest thing to gallop. He was really tough. And they all kept watching me gallop this pony, and they said, well, he probably ain't going to make a jockey. He can't even gallop a pony. So then one day, my cousin, he got on him and galloped him around there. And the horse was really, really tough, you know, the pony was. Because Eddie Reynolds was like 300 pounds. He was a big guy. He wasn't fat. He was just big. As a matter of fact, he used to be a football player for the New Orleans Saints. Mm. And this was his pony. He was a big pony. You know, well, come to find out, he was really, really tough. So then they put me on a thoroughbred, and I didn't have any problem at all galloping them.
After being on that pony, it was a lot easier, right?
Yeah, it was. Because like I said, when you put a D-bit in that pony's mouth, and he was tough. He was real tough.
And what were your cousins teaching you along the way, or was it mostly Eddie Reynolds teaching you?
Yeah, they taught me every step of the way. As a matter of fact, the first time I ever went to the starting gate, I was with Early. He was teaching me how to break out of the gate.
And was he already riding at the time?
Oh, yeah, he'd been riding 10 years probably. Yeah, he was already famous by then.
And what was the best piece of advice he gave you at that young stage?
Just work hard. I can remember that. Just said, you know, you have to do the morning work to get the afternoon work. That was pretty much it. He said, don't matter how good you do, how many races you win, you can't slack off in the morning times. You have to do the morning work. And they instilled that in me when I first started. And like I said, 45 years later, I still do it. I go out there 4 or 5 mornings a week, you know, get on my horses. Even if I don't have nothing to get on, I still go out just to walk around, you know, talk to the trainers, and, you know, because they're there every day, so they want you to see you there every day. You know, like I said, you can get away with that for a little bit if you're doing really well, but the minute them horses quit running good, I mean, your career can tank in overnight. I mean, that's how fast it can go, unless you're out there, you know, keep working and working, keep your business built up. So I think that's one of the things that's carried me along so well all these years and rode so many horses, because I'm not afraid to work.
Good piece of advice he gave you.
Yes.
And how many horses would you gallop in the morning in Chicago there starting out?
I don't know, 7 or 8 a day, just ever how many you had. I didn't even really notice it because it was so much fun. I couldn't believe they was actually paying me for getting on horses. I mean, it was a lot of fun back them days.
I love it. Love it. And how long did you stay in Chicago then?
Well, I was there that whole summer. I went from Arlington Park over to Sportsman's Park and stayed there till, I guess, November. And then I went down to Hot Springs, continued galloping down there. And I went from Hot Springs to Beulah Park. When I was down at Hot Springs, my cousins, they knew a guy up in Ohio that really liked to ride the Bug. And they called him up and asked him if he wanted a new Bug rider just starting out. He said, yeah, send him on up and we'll see what we got. So I went up there and I started riding for him right off the bat. And just done well ever since.
What was his name?
W.J. Danner. Back in the 70s and early 80s, he was leading trainer around River Downs, Beulah Park. He won a lot of races, and I won a lot for him. You know, we had a lot of success about the first 10 years or so.
And did you find that when you arrived to Ohio that you started winning right off the bat for him, or did he think you were ready to go, or what was that process like?
Well, I got there about 2 weeks before the meet started and got to working a bunch of horses. And the very first day, they put me on like, I don't know, 8 or 9 horses. Right. And the steward said, you know, we can't let him ride that many first day. He's never rode before. You know, we don't know if he can even ride. They said, we'll let him ride 2 horses the first day and then he can go ahead and start out, you know, on the next day. So the first day I rode 2. I think I run like 3rd or 4th on them. The next day, I think I rode the card, and I win 2 the second day I ever rode.
Wow.
So, and I was kind of on my way. You know, and I was leading rider there the first meet I ever rode. I mean, I was winning everything in sight. I thought I was going to be the next Willie Shoemaker. I swear I couldn't spell horse. I think I started riding way too soon. I could have probably used another year or two galloping. But, you know, my cousins, they said I was ready, so I went on up there.
That's surprising for me to hear you say that. Here you were, leading rider the first year ever, and you just start off swinging. You're winning left and right, and you still
think... Yeah, like I said, first meet I ever rode at, I was leading rider up there, and I mean, I was winning tons of races. And like I said, I look back at it now, I swear I couldn't even spell horse.
So you still think you started?
I was riding the best horses, though. Danner, he had so many good horses back in them days. And I think I was just riding the best horse. That's all it was to it. If you could just get them out of the gate, they pretty much carried you around there. It took me about 3 years before I really thought I caught on good enough where I could, you know, do a really good job. But I was still winning a lot of races in the first 2 or 3 years, you know. I really didn't have a slow time or anything. But like I said, back then, I thought I was going to be the next Willie Shoemaker. You know? I was winning so many races. And like I said, it just... I look back at it now, and I'm thinking, man, I don't know why I started so quick. I just got lucky, I guess.
Well, and I think that's really probably true of everyone, Perry. You're so eager to start, and you can't wait, and you feel like you're ready. And I know my very first race, like, I thought I was as fit as I could possibly be and thought I was absolutely ready. And I'll tell you the same thing. I started way too early and, you know, wasn't as fit as I thought I was. And, you know, you get off that first horse ever, for me anyway, and, you know, your legs are a little shaky, and it's a different...
I know that feeling.
Yeah. Well, do you remember your first race?
No, it was kind of a blur. It was too long ago.
Well... 49,968 mounts ago, so that is understandable, Perry. Makes sense. Yeah. But isn't it true? Describe to our audience how when you first start out, it all happens just so fast. And then, you know, as you get more seasoned, how that comes to you.
Yeah, it does. It seems like, you know, you break out a gate and bam, you're at the finish line. You know, you can't really remember what happened in between. And, I mean, it does. It goes by really quick when you first start out riding.
But then describe to us how it comes to you today. Is it, do you know exactly where everyone else is in the race? Does it go slow for you?
Yeah, pretty much. As soon as I get in the starting gate, I kind of get tunnel vision. I just, you know, I can, you know, picture it going down the backside, you know, how things will develop. And, you know, and you ride with these guys all the time. You pretty much get to picking out their habits or what they'll do, or where they'll be. So you just kind of, you know, you learn more as you go along. I mean, it gets a lot easier as you go along.
Perry, when you first started out there in Ohio, who were some of your mentors, and how was the atmosphere in the jocks room? Were they pretty helpful, or was it a bit competitive?
No, they back in them days, they all kind of kept to themselves. You know, they didn't really like it when a new kid come in and start taking over, because they'd been doing it for a lot of years. So they really didn't really say much to me, or you know. Because, like I said, I wasn't around there, you know, like galloping horses and growing up, or, you know, being around all these people. I just came in one day and just started riding. You know, I was very, very new to them. So I really didn't have any friends there, and didn't really know anybody. So I really didn't have any mentors, you know.
Well, and it probably didn't help your popularity status when you just come in and start stealing their mounts and
yeah, started races. Winning everything. No, they didn't really like that much.
Yeah, I can't imagine that they would, Barry.
Yeah.
Definitely not. So nobody really helped you out in the rooms. You were kind of just on your
pretty
own.
Pretty much on my own, yeah.
And then did you at that time, I've had other guests on the show here talk about back in the day they had contracts. Versus,
right.
You know, agents and the way it goes now. Is that how you started out with riding in Ohio? You had a contract?
Yes. Danner held my contract when I first started.
And so describe that to us as far as how that works with having the bug or the apprentice weight allowance and how long that carried on for.
Well, it went from... the time you win your fifth race, 1 year from that date is how long your contract lasted. And that's how long your bug lasted, was 1 year. And it wasn't like he had a contract on me and I had to go to the barn, do all this work and go and ride and not get paid or anything. It was just a piece of paper. That's all it was, just because they had to have it back in them days. But that was it. You know, he didn't abuse it or, you know, make me do all extra kind of stuff or anything. It was just one of them things where you had to have a contract to start riding back in them days. So it worked out good.
Was he a good teacher?
Yeah. Yeah. He was really good. He was patient. You know, somebody he didn't even know just to come in and stick you on all of his horses. I thought that was, I didn't know much about it then, but when you think about it now, that was pretty impressive on his part, you know, just to put a green guy that had never rode anything, just start sticking him on all his horses. And like I said, we were winning races left and right.
And you described to us earlier that you thought you started out too soon and you had a lot to learn. And what were some of the things that you did struggle with early on?
I have to think about that for a second. Well, back then when I was first starting, I wasn't thinking anything. You know, I was winning so many races that I thought I knew it all. You know, I just thought, you know, this is it. And then later on, after a couple of years, then I got to thinking back about it. And, you know, I could have probably rode a lot better races and done a lot better if I would have, you know, waited longer. So.
Did you have opportunities with this contract we mentioned? Did you have opportunities to ride for anyone else if he didn't have a horse in the race?
Yeah, if he didn't have a horse in the race, I just couldn't ride against him. You know, if he had one in there, I had to ride it or I had to sit it out, you know. And like I said, he pretty much rode me on almost all of them, so it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a bad deal.
And he was the leading trainer at the time?
Yes, he was. Yep.
Yeah, definitely very good opportunity there, Perry. And so
yep.
Would you, in the mornings, in the early days then, would you mostly just spend every morning helping him working horses in the morning, or did you get a chance to go out and introduce yourself to the other trainers stabled there?
You know, I would usually get on horses for him for about maybe 2 hours, and then I had a little bit of time to go out and, you know, meet other people.
And so after you lost the bug, was that contract gone? It was no longer in existence then?
Right. You just kind of pretty much tore it up after you lost your bug.
But then did you still continue to ride for him?
Yeah. I rode for him for, I guess, about maybe 10 years, the first 10 years that I rode. I pretty much rode, you know, first call for him. You know, I didn't ride them all, but I rode the biggest majority of them for about the first 10 years.
Does he still train there?
He don't. He's got a son that trains. He's been retired for a few years. He still comes out once in a while to help his son, but he hasn't trained for a few years.
Who are some of the other main trainers that you rode for in the beginning?
Jeez, it's been so long I couldn't even think about it. You know, that was a few years ago.
Yeah. That's true, Perry.
Yeah.
That's true. Well,
yeah.
That's okay, because it's actually time for us to go to break. So, folks, stay with us. You are listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Ah! Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit Tito'sVodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Pena, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network. But the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit pdjf.org and start making a difference today.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Through from the inside, Tanner Me Boy. Here comes Perry Utes on Tanner Me Boy. He's moved up into second, center of the track in third. That is Baton Rouge. Here's Tanner Me Boy, who puts a head in front. This could be the one for Perry Utes. It's Tanner Me Boy in front over Autonomous. Perry Utes, just the 17th rider in history to win 6,000 races. Perry Utes wins it. Autonomous second, then Baton Rouge.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm your host, Christina McManigal, and I am joined tonight by jockey Perry Utes. Perry, that was win number 6,000, which is a pretty astronomical number to think about. What do you feel hearing that replay?
Well, it brings back memories. It's like I said, I can remember it just like it was yesterday. And I was glad to win it for somebody that had rode a lot of horses for Doug Cowan. So that's always nice when you can win a big milestone for somebody you rode a lot of horses for.
Did you ever think when you first started out that you would reach win number 6,000 and then, eventually, as I mentioned in the introduction, you're currently ninth all-time leading jockey by number of wins. And that, I fully expect you to continue climbing up those ranks, Perry. So did you ever think you would get to that point?
Never, ever give it a thought. Who would have thought when you first start out, that you can win that many? I was hoping I could make a good living at it. That's what I was hoping for. I never really set any goals or, never even really thought about it. And then first time I really ever give it any thought at all was when I was closing in on my tooth. And I said, man, that's pretty neat. Along come 3,000. I said, man, that's great. And then 4,000, and then 5,000, and then 6,000. I thought, well, I probably won't go much farther than that. Now here I am closing in on 7,000.
So. Yeah, that number's coming up. That's right around the corner, Barry.
I'm hoping sometime, maybe next summer or so, good year, I might could do it next summer.
It's gonna happen. It's gonna happen. It's hard to imagine. It's crazy. And talking about, as I just mentioned, going back to the beginning of everything, and you mentioned to me during the break, you had a funny story about your trainer, Danner. So,
right.
Please tell us that story.
Okay. When I first started out riding, we had a 2-year-old that had never started, and she ran in the middle of the summer. Her name was High Carol. And she went on to win 25 races, and 16 of them were stake races. And I was the only jockey to ever win on her. One time, I think it was about her fourth year of running or something, she was in a stake, and I just went down in a spill, and I broke my collarbone. And he came to me, I think, two or three days later, Danner did, and he said, I need you to ride this horse. And I told him, I said, there's no, I've got a broken collarbone. I got one of them figure eight harnesses that hold your arms back. And I said, I can't ride. And he told me, you won't have to ride. All you got to do is hang on. He said, the pony boy will get you to the gate. The gate man will handle you in the gate. He said, just break out of there. Don't fall off. He said, the outrider will pull you up when the race is over. You won't have to do nothing. And sure enough, it happened just like he said. The horse went right to the front. I think she set a track record in the stake that day. And I rode her with a broken collarbone. I mean, I couldn't hit her. I couldn't do anything. All I could do was just hang on. So I thought that was very impressive that a guy would ride you on a horse. But he knew that I was the only one to ever win on that filly. And he'd rode a couple other guys when I got hurt or something, and she didn't run as good for them. So he wanted me to ride her, and she win. So like I said, and I think back these days, and how could you put a jockey on there with a broken arm? But he did. So I thought that was a pretty cool story.
What's the most amazing part of that story, Perry, is that you did it. You went out, you won.
Yeah, well, like I said, I grabbed two hands full of mane coming out of the gate. That's pretty much all I did. I just kind of sat on her. She was real easy to ride. She had a lot of speed. All you had to do was just, like I said, don't fall off leaving the gate. You know, she just galloped around there. I think, like I said, she set her track record, and I never even done nothing but sat on her.
Wow.
But she was such a nice horse. I mean, I've never, ever come across another horse like her. Like
really?
I said, I won 25 races on her. 16 of them were stakes and handicaps.
That's amazing. Why is that some horses, and her in particular, just take to certain riders? What was it you think that maybe you did that you guys were just a good fit?
No, that I couldn't tell you.
just the way they are, I guess.
Right, right. That's like there's been a few jockeys, not a whole lot, but there's been a few that horses just ran for them. I don't know why. They didn't do anything special on a horse, more so than anybody else, but it seemed like horses just ran for them. You got Willie Shoemaker, Pat Day, Steve Coffin. I mean, horses just ran for them. I don't know what it was. They didn't, you know, get real, real busy on a horse. They didn't do much, but horses just ran well for them. Now, me, they don't do that. I have to make them run. I mean, I have to really, really get after them hard, hit them a lot, you know, do everything you can just to make them run. Like I said, I wished I had that. Oh, and Russell Bayes was kind of like that. Mm-hmm. But he rode pretty hard, though. I mean, horses ran well for him, but he would really ride them out hard. But like I said, I always wished that I had that, you know, that horses just jump out of there and go to running for you without having to do much. But like I said, Pinkay, he was like me. He had to make them run. Angel Cordero, he had to make them run. You know, he just, you know, like I said, some guys are just gifted like that.
Well, you make them run, Perry. I can tell you that. I don't know how many times I've been, you know, playing the races at Turfway, and it just seems like you carry them home.
You know? Well, like I said, I work on them hard, though. I mean, I haven't had too many in my whole career that just carried me around there where I didn't have to do a lot. I had to pretty much work on every one of them, which I don't mind. I mean, that don't bother me none.
Well, like you mentioned, High Carol that day, you didn't have to. Thank God you didn't have to work hard on her that day with the broken collarbone.
Yeah, like I said, there was no way you could hit one because, like I said, it snapped plumbing too. I mean, it was broke pretty good. So,
I read a statistic, Perry, and tell me, and maybe this is an outdated number, I'm not sure, but tell me if this is true. You've broken, you would estimate, 40 bones in your career?
Yep, pretty much. Maybe probably even more. 40 is about as many as I can remember. There's probably been more.
My God.
Yeah. I broke my back 3 different times. I broke 11 vertebrae in my back.
11?
Yeah. And the last time, I broke 5 all at one time. And that's doctors told me that my jockey career was over. I looked him at and I said, well, I don't think so. I said, I'll know when it's done. And that was, I think, 11 years ago when probably over 2,000 races since then, rode over 15,000. So I think I was right and he was wrong.
Oh, my gosh. I'm sure he's looking at the results at Turfway Park and probably just shaking his head.
Yeah, I'd like to send him a card or something and tell him, na, 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 na. Yeah, he did. He told me, he said, your jockeying days are over. That's why I don't think so.
I heard you broke your neck 3 times.
Well, I cracked 2 vertebrae in my neck. I did that, and I did 5 in the middle of my back, and then I did broke 4 lower ones. So I've run all up and down my spine there.
Do you find, Perry, that those cold winter mornings, it's a little bit harder to get out of bed and your bones ache a little bit?
Not really. You'd be surprised that, it's not near as bad as what you'd think for as many times I've been broken up. I think it's because I stay fit, you know. And like I said, I've never been not fit since I was probably 18 years old. So I think that has a lot to do with it. And I think that's why the doctor thought that when I broke my back that I couldn't do it anymore, because I think I was about 50 back then. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people, when they get older and they break stuff, they just kind of sit around and they don't do a lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, their bones just start to ache too much. But I never sat still. I mean, I started rehabbing as soon as I could. So I think that's one of the things that keeps me going, just because I do stay pretty fit.
Tell us about probably the most amazing story I've ever heard, Perry, and maybe even more amazing than the broken collarbone story, is the motorcycle wreck story.
Yeah, that was a pretty wild day. Yeah, I was coming home from work one morning after I got done getting on horses. I was going down 275, and I was in the middle lane, three-lane highway. I was doing probably 70 miles an hour. And a car came right up beside me and came out and sideswiped me and knocked me right off the motorcycle. I went sliding down the road. Like I said, I was doing 70 miles an hour, so I slid a long ways. And then when I finally quit sliding, I was kind of off to the side, and I stood up, and I started wiggling everything. Everything was still working. There's nothing broke. And I said, man, that was a miracle right there. I mean, that was a miracle. And they called the cops, and they come pick my motorcycle up. I called my agent and told him to come give me a ride back to the house so I could pick up my truck. I went back. Rode 9 races that afternoon, won the first 2. So, I mean, it didn't slow me down at all.
That's incredible. Won 2 races after having a motorcycle wreck at 70 miles an hour, and you win 2.
Yeah, like I said, I think I was blessed that day. I think God had his hands all over that wreck. 'Cause, like I said, besides just going down and going that fast and everything, nothing ran over me. There was a guy that was right behind me when this accident happened. He had sense enough to slow down and stay right behind me and follow me while I was rolling and getting off the road, and he kept all the cars off of me. You know, he kept all the traffic off of me, and he stopped and, you know, he said, man, are you okay? I said, yeah. So everything's working. Nothing broke. I think I had a little bitty spot on my hand about the size of a dime where I'd laid my hand down on the concrete. I guess I was sliding on it, And that was it. That's all I got.
Thank God.
Motorcycle was totaled, though. It didn't do well. It didn't. I didn't really care. I could get another motorcycle, you know.
Is that your hobby, Perry, to ride bikes?
Yeah, pretty much. That's about the only thing I ever do besides ride horses.
Dougie Perry Utes joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Perry, you talked about the doctor telling you your career was over, but you're so fit that you never slowed down and you have no issues or anything like that. And so tell us, what do you do as far as diet and working out? Do you work out? You mentioned you get on so many horses in the morning. I wouldn't think you would have to as much as you ride.
Right. I don't do any extra stuff, but just mostly just getting on horses in the mornings and, you know, and riding. You know, I've rode, well, like I said, almost 50,000 races, so I've stayed busy the whole time. And, you know, that's one of the things that's really surprising. At 63 years old, I still ride 7, 8, 9 a day. You know, it's most of the time when jockeys get this old, they're down to like 1 or 2 a week, you know, if they're still riding. But I've been really lucky that, you know, trainers, they still ride me. And I think as long as I keep winning, they'll keep riding me.
Perry, you're 63 years old. I haven't yet mentioned that. And still going strong, still getting on horses in the morning, still winning races left and right. Do you just plan on doing it as long as you can do it? Or do you have a number in your mind that's when you'll retire? Or what's your plan?
Well, I'm hoping that I can get about 3.5, 4 more years. That's what I'm really hoping for. And, you know, good years, not just years that you just go in, say you're a jockey and you just ride. You know, I'm hoping I can still be competitive for about 3 or 4 more years, and then I think I'll try something different.
What do you think you'll do?
I'll probably just get on horses in the morning just to stay fit, because the doctor's done told me if I ever just sit around, then that's when it'll all start. You know, that's when you start shriveling up and all the aches and pains will really hit you hard. So I'll probably just get on a few horses in the mornings, and that's about it, you know.
You love to ride, don't you?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Now, we talked about you don't work out. You get on so many horses, you don't need to. What is your diet? What does your diet consist of?
Well, I've been on the same diet for like 45 years. I've never varied. I've never, you know, went off of it. I don't starve myself at all. I'm just very disciplined. Like in the morning times, I start with a cup of coffee and a sweet roll. Lunchtime, I'll have half a sandwich. And then at supper, I'll eat a normal meal. And before I go to bed, I might have ice cream for a snack. And that's pretty much it. Same thing every single day for 45 years. I never, ever sit around and pig out. Never. You know, it's the same routine every single day. And it's a discipline thing. And I've really, really been blessed that I've been able to keep my weight just almost the same for 45 years. I mean, it might go up a pound or two, up or down, but pretty much it's the same every day when I go to work. So I've been really, really, really blessed about that. I think that's one of the things that's kept me going so long, that I don't have to fight it, you know.
What is your weight?
110. Like I said, I've pretty much weighed that for 40-something years.
You never have to sit in the box?
Never. I think I've been in it 3 times in my whole life, and that was back when horses used to get in with 107, 108 pounds. And I just seen there was no future in that, so I don't do that, no.
Perry, this hour is flying by. We don't have a lot of time left. I want to talk about your wife. And you guys met at the racetrack, and tell us that story.
Well, she was hot walker back then. She was walking horses around the barn. that I was working in. It was Danner's barn. She was on the other side. And I used to watch her walk by, and I said, that girl's cute. I think I'd like to ask her out. So I did. We went out on a date, and we've been together pretty much ever since. Married for 33 years.
Wow.
Yeah, and you talk about a hardworking girl now. She gets up. She works for Bill Connolly. She's a groom and assistant trainer. And she oversees everything while he's down in Florida. And she gets up about 3 o'clock in the morning every day, 7 days a week, and gets to the barn around 4 and stays there till around 1:30, 2 o'clock. And this is every day. And she don't seem to mind it. She loves the horses. Like I said, she works a whole lot harder than I do.
You ever have any difficult situations where you might be riding a horse for Bill Connolly and you have to ride someone else's horse, or do you ever have any situations like that?
Yeah, once in a while, and she don't take it well. she kind of takes it personal when I don't ride her horses. But she understands, though, you know, that, you know, this is a business, you know, this is not fun and games, but she don't like it well when I take off one of her horses.
But I bet she loves it when you win for her.
Yeah. I won one for her last week. It was pretty cool.
You guys have any kids together?
Yeah, we got 2 grown boys.
And how old are they?
Yeah, one of them will be 28 here in another 2 months, and the other one is 24.
And do they have anything to do with the racetrack?
Not at all. Nothing. They don't really care for it at all. They went out a few times whenever I would, like, hit one of my milestones, like 3,000 win, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000, but they didn't really enjoy it. You know, all their friends and everything, they thought that was pretty cool, having a dad for a jockey. They weren't impressed. To me, I was just dad.
That's crazy. And so they never had any, they had no desire to ride or even
no,
though you
zero,
both.
Absolutely zero interest in horses at all. Zero. And both of them 6 foot tall, so they had no shot of being a jockey.
Wow, how did that happen?
I think on my wife's side of the family, everybody was real tall.
Yeah, they weren't didn't have jockey futures ahead of them for sure.
No. They by the time they were like 13 years old, they was tall as I was. And like I said, they didn't quit growing either. Both of them 6 foot tall.
And what do they do?
Well, one of them's married and he lives in Atlanta, Georgia. He works for Kroger's, and the other one, he's just piddling around here. He was working, but he's in between jobs right now, so he's just taking a little break. He worked really, really hard for about 7 years. And he thought he'd take a little time off.
Well, Perry, we only have about 3 minutes left. We touched briefly. You said, hi, Carol, the horse you won 16 stakes races with, the horse you won a race with when you had a broken collarbone. There was something special about her, and you two just clicked, and she was obviously one of your very favorites. Do you have any other special horses, special victories that come to mind that are your favorite?
Yeah, I rode a little horse called Old Man Buck for Kenny McPeak, and I won the Cradle Stakes on him here at River Downs. It was $200,000, and I liked him pretty well. He was a pretty cool horse. And I went to Keeneland and rode him in the $500,000, and I ran third on him. And he went to the Breeders' Cup after that. Mm. So that was pretty cool. I didn't get to ride him in the Breeders' Cup, but he was one of my more favorite horses.
You mentioned you didn't get to ride in the Breeders' Cup. Perry, it brings to mind, I read an article. There's a documentary out there that I encourage everyone to watch, entitled Iron Man Perry Utes, and it won the 2015 Eclipse Award. It's just so well done. And I read that when you were invited to join them for the award, you declined, saying that you had to ride.
Yes, I did. I was at Turfway Park, and I had to ride that night, so I couldn't go down and join in the festivities.
You didn't go?
No.
That's amazing. And we joked around during the break how you don't like watching yourself on TV or hearing your voice. Do you enjoy watching Iron Man Paraute?
It was okay. I just don't like the sound of my voice when I'm on TV. You know, but those guys, they did such a good job with that video. I mean, they made everybody look good that was in it. I mean, they knew what they were doing, those people. It wasn't just like some guy, you know, with a camera following you around or something. I mean, these guys are professionals. They know exactly what they're doing. So, and they were really great guys, both of them, their brothers, John and Brad Hennigan. And that was their second Eclipse that they had won. They win the Eclipse for first Saturday in May. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yes. How long did it take to film that?
I think they followed me around about 3 days.
And then when that was announced as winning the Eclipse Award, did you get a lot of a notice for that? I guess a lot of people were aware of the success it had.
Yeah, because it was on cable there. They showed it for about a year on cable TV. So a lot of people had seen it.
That's very impressive, Perry. And so just wrapping things up here with your 7,000th victory nearing closer, and that's just right around the corner. Do you have any other goals you would like to accomplish within the next couple of years?
Yeah, there's a few more guys on that all-time win list that I'd like to pass up.
They're within reach, Perry. They're within reach.
Yeah. I think I can get up to about sixth place pretty easily. And the fifth guy, it might take a little while. I don't know if I got enough time left or not to catch him. But I don't think I can go no closer than that, no closer than the fifth guy. I think he's got like close to 7,400 wins. David Gull, I think if with a little luck I could catch him. But I don't think I can go much farther than that. And like I said, I'm running out of time.
Perry, you're amazing.
But that's why I want to ride for 3 or 4 more years. I would like to try to get that far. But like I said, I pretty much take it day by day. You know, I don't really want to make any real long plans, you know.
You've accomplished so much, Perry, and the sky's the limit for you. And we are wishing you all the best. Unfortunately, we are all out of time. But thank you so much for joining us, Perry.
Okay.
Folks, you can check out this show and replays of all of our other shows on the website, horseracingradio.net. And while you are there, check out all of the other great shows you can find here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, like Trainer Talk, Equine Forum, and Express Bet Radio. Be sure to join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Christina McManigal, and thank you for listening.